are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thanks for being here at the show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into, and lots of folks around the planet have the habit. Folks, you cannot imagine the emails I've been getting since last night. I am getting emails from people trying to convince me that those are reflections off of the Spirit Rover. And I spent 2 freaking hours saying that. 2 freaking hours saying that that's what those are. And I'm getting emails from people saying, you know, I just listened to your show and I think it's pretty far-fetched because take a look at this link and you'll see those are reflections off of the rover. Well, duh. Time to put your head in fresh air, my friend. My friends, I got a bunch of those. You gotta wonder. Now, I have made some other discoveries. You know, I mentioned in the show last night that photo from NASA had been cooked, and I said that was the reason for the show. I said that it had been altered. There was something missing, and I asked, why is that missing? Well, I got an email from someone who did an analysis on the photo, and that analysis said, and let me get to it, it said that this image had been modified by NASA on July 30th, 2008, at 1812.18 hours. So that's 12 minutes and 18 seconds after 6 p.m., all right, that's what the analysis showed. It bears out what I told you, and that was what the show was about. So please, if you're trying to convince me that those are reflections off of the rover, well, did you even listen to the show? I mean, it's still up there. Why don't you go watch it? Why don't you go listen to it? I spent 2 hours saying that. Now, I do have some more discoveries, some big discoveries, and I'm looking at my calendar here. I want to tell you what date I'm going to be sharing those. Oh, yeah, here it is. 2 days after hell freezes. Now, my guest this evening, if he's still with me, I don't know, he may have run for cover, is Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. And I'm going to bring him on in just a minute. And I would urge you to actually listen to the show. I would urge you to listen to what is actually said and don't imprint on it what you wish had been said or what you dream had been said or what after smoking several reefers you believe was said, all right? Listen to what is said. That's what it's all about. Now, some of you are going to write to me and say, oh, don't get so worked up about it. Folks, you can't imagine. It's been a flood of email that is absolutely from smart, intelligent people, but the email is absolutely butt stupid. I spent 2 hours saying that was reflections. Those were reflections from equipment that's on the rover. I proved, I think, sufficiently that it's not the equipment they show us, but it is equipment on the rover, and that was not even the point of the show. 2 hours of it. But we got two more to do, and we're going to talk about something else. We'll be back. I will be. I hope you will be. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I checked the email very quickly when we went to break just to see if there was any late news coming in. And what I found was an email that said, calm down, calm down. No. All right. My guest this evening is Daryl Sims. He's been with us before. I think everyone knows Daryl Sims. He's known as the Alien Hunter, and he's got quite a past, quite a history, both in military, doing some training at for the CIA, as an investigator, and then civilian. As an investigator and someone who's really been on the trail of this whole alien story for a few decades now. Daryl, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be back, Kevin.
I apologize that you had to sit through my rant there at the beginning, but I don't apologize very strenuously.
I found the whole thing enlightening.
2 hours, Daryl, 2 hours, I said it over and over and over and over and over, and I'm getting emails from people trying to convince me of what I said.
Well, you know, I used to know a grenade instructor in the basic training.
Yeah.
And he said sometimes if you get too close to the grenades when they're going off in the practice, that you can't hear very well. What?
I guess that's true. All right. Look, I'm not angry at people for writing me. I'm not. I am just frustrated that I can say something 1,004,000 times and someone tries to convince me of what I just said. Absolutely astounding. All right, Daryl, you have been on the trail of aliens for how many years now?
Well, I usually say 38 because I don't like to divulge how ancient I really am. I'm actually older than rocks. But the fact is that technically the way it all started for me was at age 3 and a half there was an event where the entities ended up in my room. I have no idea why nor any specifics other than what I saw and so on, but that started me at 3 and a half years old, and my events ended violently 13 years later at age 17, and nothing else happened after that, and I thought, yay, you know, it's over. That's it. So I'll just forget it and let it go. Then I got married, and a couple of years later, had a son, and lo and behold, he gets taken. And my wife looks over at me and says, "What's going on? What does all this mean?" And I, oh my gosh! And so I had to tell her the story of what had happened to me, and now it's our son. So at that point, I was willing to let live, I guess, and just let things go. But the problem was when they came after my son, that was it. You can mess with me and do all kinds of stuff, but boy, when you come after my kids, you're in trouble, and I'll come after you with a vengeance. So now I hunt them that hunted me and hunted my son. Now they're the prey, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, you have been really out on the forefront of saying, look, if these If these extraterrestrials really exist, and if they're really coming here to Earth, and if they're really abducting people, they have to be leaving some kind of evidence of that behind. There has to be some type of physical evidence. And you've been about the business of collecting physical evidence of alien presence. And in fact, you have a book out about that. And I'm trying to remember the title. I'm drawing a blank. It's The Evidence in the Light or something like that.
Light, that's correct. Alien Hunter, Evidence in Light.
In Light.
But it's basically a look at physical evidence in the visible light realm. In other words, if someone claims to be an abductee, and the thing we would look for first is obvious physical signs of physical contact, bruisings, strap marks, cuts, lumps, bumps, things on them that usually is attendant to this type of phenomena. We also look at things in the visible light, watching them. Some of the techniques we use in determining whether people are lying, telling the truth, or even just hallucinating, we can determine just by watching them. So a lot of things we're going to notice in the visible realm. We do handwriting analysis on these people. They fill out these large forms. They're very involved, and it gives us a great deal of more information on them. That's all in the visible range. Then at some point, we're looking for evidence, if we think the story is true, in other realms, in the invisible. Invisible, to begin with, would be X-rays, as an example. Using X-rays, you can often find other maladies with people from the alleged implant phenomena, with these objects inside people, which is actually a fairly rare occurrence. But there's evidence there, too. And then there's another area of the infrared and ultraviolet range. There's evidence that shows up in those ranges as well, in reference to UFOs and in reference to physical evidence on abductees. So we're interested in looking at every aspect of this, from the visible to the invisible range. Just, in other words, what the alien is looking at whenever they see you, in my opinion, the alien through that black lens cover literally is seeing you in infrared, in the ultraviolet, in the visible light, and in X-ray all at the same time. Now, I don't know how that happens.
Oh, wait a minute. You're saying when an extraterrestrial is looking at us and he's looking through those big black eyes, he's actually seeing not the visible light range but infrared and ultraviolet?
Yes, I think that he is, and many times abductees will describe, and especially if they don't really have a clue what's going on with this stuff, they'll say, it was the strangest thing, they had me on this hard slab-like bed, a table that they had me on, and they were looking at me like they were, and it just doesn't make any sense. They said they're looking at me like examining me, but like they're looking in. And I suspect that they are, actually literally looking in with X-ray, an X-ray capacity there. And I'm not sure whether that's due to the lenses or whether it's due to some other mechanism inside some of the entities, but it seems to be consistent with stuff they find, because with my senior investigator, one of the things they did with him, they lost him for 22 years. By that I mean they were abducting him from childhood up to about age 30, and then all of a sudden he moved from Pennsylvania down to Houston almost overnight. They just moved quickly, and I suspect that the alien entities that patrolled that area, so to speak, picked him up normally. They just noticed he was gone. And 22 years later, he goes on a vacation up north with a friend of his, and they get tagged. And the aliens were very excited to see him, actually.
What do you mean they get tagged?
Dead, and they were excited they got him back.
What do you mean they got tagged?
So he'd been missing for 22 years as far as they were concerned, and the one thing that was fascinating is they're looking at him like they're looking at him with X-ray vision, and they look at him and they notice something's wrong, and they're real upset with him.
Daryl, what do you mean?
What were they upset over? And he said that I had a vasectomy.
Daryl, what do you mean they got tagged?
I mean, what I mean by that, they got picked up. They got noticed. And then, in other words, I suspect that these entities, since we're talking about the invisible range of literally all kinds of things, data, entities, and so on, the entities, in my opinion, locate us through something like a neural scan. It's bizarre to have to say this stuff, but I just don't know any other explanation for it. But when they pick you up on the radar, so to speak, your signature, and you're in their area, and that you're the one they're supposed to be picking up, you're going. And they caught them up in their, apparently, their patrol area, I guess, in a better lack for, of a better way to say it. In that patrol area, they seem to have picked them up, and I use the word tag or catch or...
So they were abducted again.
Abducted again. Another term I use is a pizza delivery service. We're just a human pizza they're delivering to someone else.
Who do they deliver us to?
Usually, the entities, the little gray guys, usually will take you to a guy often referred to as the doctor. This is a character that is a lot smarter than the guys that picked you up. And the guys that picked you up got an IQ of about 80, 85 if you're lucky. They're like a little 286 computer with legs. And they take you to a guy who looks very similar to them, but who's usually taller and just about a lot smarter, about double in intelligence easily. And he's pretty sharp, and he's the one that usually does the various procedures on people. And I hesitate to use the word procedure sometimes and surgery and things like that, because when we have our medical people or cardiovascular surgeons and doctors, MDs, and so on, to look at this stuff carefully, geneticists and so on, they just flat state that a lot of these so-called procedures, they're not even, it's like they're not valid. It's like it's a cover-up. And I've even had a neurosurgeon call me one time, on the phone one time, and ask me if... about abductees, and said, she asked me directly in from her office, she said, do you feel like, Mr. Sims, that these entities are covering up some of the things they did to people with their former injuries? And I said, we have ample evidence of that, doctor. I said, but you're the one that's the authority on the medical field. You tell me. And she said, well, I have a number of people who are patients here that are your abductees. And I said, yes, ma'am, I know that. And she said, some of the damages done to them are more extensive than the quote-unquote car wrecks and other things that happened to them. I said, you're saying that those injuries have been covered up by the entity? And she said, that is correct. Well, anyway, I'm writing a paper on that exact subject. It's called Them Bones, and it goes into injuries that people have sustained that have been covered up by the entities.
Why do they cover it up?
That's a good question. Let me give you a case in point. A young lady met me at a conference in 1991. It was a Tim Beckett conference. And she said, I meet a lot of the criteria that's on your questionnaire. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I have a rare drug allergy to procaines. I have this, I have that. And she said, and on top of all that, she said, I got two sets of teeth. And I said, what? She said, look. And sure enough, she had two sets of teeth. I laughed and I said, you know, I don't want to be, you know, rude here or anything, but does your dentist give you a break? I mean, no. She just started laughing. She said, no. And I said, well, have you ever had an injury or anything that you could not account for? And she said, oh, yes, sir. And I said, well, tell me the story. She said, when I was a little girl, my mom and dad had sprained my arm or something, and so they took me to the doctor. The doctor x-rayed it. There was no broken bone there from that injury. She said, but he did see the damages, broken bones, and so on, that were there from other injuries. I said, okay, what happened? She said, we don't know. I said, what do you mean? She said, the doctor made my parents leave the room and then asked me questions all by myself, like, when did your daddy or your mom break your arm? When did you get this wrist broken? And she said, I truthfully told him I've never had a broken wrist. And of course, she did because he's sitting there looking at the broken bones.
Mm-hmm.
Over. And she says, but my mommy and daddy, she said, would never hurt me or harm me in any way. And she said, until you mentioned it, until I read your questionnaire, she said, I never put it together. She said, but I'll tell you what, they called the sheriff and said they almost arrested my parents for an injury to me that they didn't do. That's what I'm talking about.
So a lot of people that have been abducted have that sort of injury history.
They may have, and I'll give you, again, I can use other people as examples, but I'll give you one of my own self, where I went down to, I went to the VA hospital for my little checkup. They would check up, and they take real good care of you here in Houston. I mean, they really do. And so anyway, I went down to my little checkup and talked to my doctor, and the doctor says, how you doing? And I said, fine. And I said, I want you to, you want to do this appointment? I said, yeah, I want to go see the ENT. And he says, okay. He said, so he set me up. And so I went back to the next time and saw the ENT. The ENT looked at me and he jumps back and he says, when did you have the surgery in your nose? I said, I beg your pardon. He said, the surgery in your nasal passage. He said, there's a large hole that's cut inside your nasal septum. I said, I've never had a surgery. He said, well, yes, you have. Now, that's just one example. I can give you other examples of myself. The doctor I was speaking to before, my regular primary care physician, the first time I went in, he said, well, how do you feel? And I said, fine. I said, I got a little pain over here on my left side. And he said, no, it's on your right side. I said, now how do you know that? He said, because that's where your broken ribs are at. I said, I don't have any broken ribs. What are you talking about? He says, you do. And so he shows me the x-rays and the record. And I said, well, that's just wrong. You know, so he calls up the radiologist. And they get in a big fight. And the radiologist screams at him, I make a couple of, whatever, $200,000 a year. Don't you, $300,000. Don't tell me how to read an x-ray. So they got in a big argument. He said, well, I guess you do have broken ribs. The question is, where'd you get them? I don't know. I think I have an idea. My last abduction event was quite violent, and I suspect that's where they came from. Now, here's the rub. You hear these stories about how the aliens love to come and heal us and help us and do all this stuff, and once in a while you'll even hear an abductee or a contactee say, well, they healed me from some problem I had. That's okay. Which indicates that they have the ability to accelerate a healing process very quickly, apparently in hours or overnight or whatever. My point is that in my case, where I ended up with broken ribs, it's obvious to me and from other injuries that I've had and others that I've seen in this phenomenon for over 38 years, from the injuries that they've had, that these guys, when they damage you, whether accidental or not, whatever the reason, they heal it back up, not to heal you, quote-unquote, but so that they won't get caught, because they never tell you what they did. You just end up going to the doctor like I did on two different occasions and finding out, you know, somebody's carving the inside of your nasal passage, and the other one is breaking your ribs.
All right, Darryl, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Darryl Sims, known as the Alien Hunter. Darryl, I don't want to get too far into this before we go over some of the Roswell stuff that you've come up with. Let's talk about Roswell. You have come up with some interesting information about the craft.
Well, there's an interesting story that's out now about the craft itself, and I was pretty intrigued by it. Basically, the story is that a friend of mine, Bill McDonald, is apparently had a contact and with an individual who is finally is now apparently deceased, and this gentleman named John Andrews, and he said, now I can, anyway, that basically he says that now I can announce personally and confirm that the design connection between the Roswell spacecraft and the Lockheed Martin unmanned craft, air vehicles, spy planes, etc., joint fight, strike fighters, etc., that there is a connection there, design connection and so on. Some people seem to think it, of course, is back engineered. Well, I thought the story was fascinating, and I've got a couple of people myself that are very, very similar to this, that these people have to die off before you can say a word. They make you swear that you'll never say a word because they think they're going to lose, of all things, government entitlement if they tell what they know about the UFO phenomena. And some of it's not very, very grandiose or wild, and some of it is just about the stuff that's true and they've seen, and it confirms a lot of what we know in the UFO community. And then you've got other people that, like this character, that just flat announced that our, a lot of our flight designs here concerning certain kinds of aircraft are back engineered or taken directly off of that image of the Roswell craft. Well, I looked at the I've known about Bill's excellent work as a forensic artist, and he did the tester's model for them based on all the data that he had studied. And as I read the story, I got more and more intrigued with it, and I looked at the tester's model real closely, and I laughed because that's very similar to the one I drew in 1963 to 1965 when I was in high school. And so I went back in my archives and dug out some old drawings that I had, scanned it, and put it together and sent an email to you with one of the pictures. And basically it says, below is a part of my story, which has, I have no personal knowledge of the Roswell craft or what it was or anything. I didn't see it personally. But my story goes on to describe the fact that the three groups of UFOs that I have here on the drawing are UFOs that I've seen. And in high school, rather than alert people around me in art class that I was doing anything other than having fun drawing my drawings, I would put windows on the disc. I would put windows all over the Roswell-like craft, because I didn't want people to know that what I was drawing, that as far as I was concerned, was from memory, or at least a very good, vivid dream that was appropriate. And at the bottom of the drawing, I've got a picture of a guy that it's a human-like being, and just his head is what's shown, and pretty ugly-type character. He's pretty mean. And I remembered him as well, and I drew him on the drawing as well. And bringing that drawing out and looking at it just brought back a lot of old memories to me. It made me wonder about the Roswell craft for me, had I actually seen it. And so because here it is in my drawings, a very similar craft, I couldn't figure out how the thing could actually fly, so I put some fenders on it, so to speak, to make it look better, and put some guns on it, the guns on the side of it, to make it more effective. If it were our craft, what we'd do with it, we'd have to have windows, so I put windows all over it, and then I put an exhaust on the back, because you have to have propulsion. I just couldn't figure out how UFOs fly. I've got three discs up here. There were three luminous discs I saw one night with two other witnesses. And those luminous discs, I had no idea how these things fly. I mean, I've been in them, but I still don't, I don't, I guess at 15 years old, 16 years old, you don't, yet things have to make sense to you. And so I just added all these attractions to it to make it more palatable for those who are looking at it, and to make it more, if I were going to try to build one, that's the way it would be, it'd have to be done, because there's just no other way than propulsion, that I knew that that could actually fly, that if I were having anything to do with it, if I could build one myself.
Okay, now this guy that said that there's a connection between the designs of the Lockheed Martin unmanned aircraft and the Roswell craft. How did he know that?
Well, I don't know the whole story. All I know is that Bill McDonnell and apparently Michael Lindemann at the time, who used to be pretty big in the UFO field until he retired after the dot-com crash, apparently they were told this information and told to keep it quiet in 1999. And since that time, they have done exactly that. And, of course, this individual is now deceased, so they're singing like a canary and telling the whole story. And this is pretty fascinating stuff. According to Lindemann, he added that Bill McDonnell had actually received the information from Andrews in 1994. Until their last phone call in 1998. This is, it doesn't prove this phenomena on a government level, but it certainly smacks at it heavily. And well, for people like that connected with the aerospace industry and NASA and so on to sit there and tell this stuff, it's just flat amazing to me.
And do you know if this guy Andrews ever saw the wreckage of the Roswell craft?
I don't know. I don't know what his connection was to that. I honestly do not know. And it probably would be a good thing for you to get Bill McDonnell to come on your program, and I think he could probably tell you a pretty interesting story about that whole thing.
All right, now, Let's jump. It may seem like we're jumping, but let's do that. Let's jump back to talking about abductees and to talking about these extraterrestrials, because all of that came into the consciousness of the modern era with the Roswell crash. And, you know, there's stories about that bodies were recovered at the Roswell crash. Some people say that there were not. Others say there were. And people with some pretty top credentials say there were. I don't know whether there were. What do you think?
All I can say, and I'll say this categorically, I am not a Roswell investigator, never have been, and probably never will be. There are other people that are out there that are far more capable of doing that than I, and I leave that in their good hands. However, I have, just because I don't deal in the Roswell matter, so to speak, doesn't mean that I am completely devoid of any information about it. By that I mean information that other people may not be privy to. Recently, for me it'd be recent, and I'm older than dirt. If you go back about 2 years ago, I was in New Mexico visiting a friend, and he said, he was waiting in his office, and he said, "Why don't you go do some UFO work while I'm working here?" And I said, "Well, okay, I'll just go out and dig up a UFO or something." And he said, "No," he said, "why don't you go talk to that Roswell guy?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "The guy in the photograph here on my desk, with that big aircraft, that real old photograph there," he said, "he lives over here right down the road." I said, "Well, get him on the phone. Let's talk to him." He said, "Well, I can tell you right now, you're going to have a hard time talking to him, because he won't talk to anybody." And I said, "He'll talk to me." He said, "No, he won't." And I said, "Yes, he will." Long story short, I found out where the guy lived, went over to his house, stood there in the hot sun in a suit for about 30 minutes. Before finally, the guy looked at me and said, "Well, hell, you might as well come on the house. You know, you're going to burn up out here." And so we went inside, and he said, we talked about everything in the world. And finally, he looks at me and said, "Aren't you going to ask me about what happened at Roswell?" And I said, "Not unless you want to tell me." He said, "Well," he said, "I was supposed to fly the bodies out." "That's where, too?" He said, "Carswell." And he said, I said, why didn't you do that? He said, "Well, Mr. Sims," he said, "you don't have to be a genius to figure this out." He said, "One day we find a flying saucer." I said, "Okay." He said, "The next day it doesn't exist." He said, "That's our same news service saying that." I get to thinking, well, what happens to the guy that flies the bodies? Maybe he disappears too. He said, so I told him no. I said, "You told your commanding officer no?" He said, "Yes, I did." I said, that's grounds for court-martial. He said, "Yes, it is." He said, "But they saw that I was not going to fly those bodies, and they just simply got another volunteer." And he said, "That's, of course, the guy that people do know that did fly it." And he said, "But I was scared to death that I might not ever come back."
Mm-hmm.
If a UFO can, if a flying saucer can disappear one day, they admit it one day, it disappeared the next. He said, just think about that if you're the pilot. You know those bodies are going to disappear. Well, what about you? And he said, I just wasn't going to take that kind of risk. I'd rather be in jail than who knows where I'd be after that. He said, I just wasn't going to do it.
Well, did he see the bodies?
Sir?
Did he see the bodies?
He apparently did not. As best I understood, and I asked him if he had any records to show that he was a pilot and all these other things, and he started pulling out, I mean, just stacks of photographs and so on. Anyway, the sad part of the story, I was going to give him to Stan Friedman, let him work with him, and a couple other investigators there, and the gentleman died. So now my recourse is to go to the family now and see if they would allow his records to be, you know, gone over and so on, and add to the story of Roswell. The second thing about Roswell is this. There's three that your audience may not know about. The second thing is that my relative called me one day, and this relative has absolutely no interest in the UFO field. In fact, it scares the whole family to death. They don't have anything to do with it. And an individual looked at me and said, I'm going to tell you something, but I don't want you to ever repeat it with my name or any of the other person's name involved ever until that's cleared by both of us. And I said, okay.
Darryl, we have to take a break. I want to hear that story, though, so when we come back, that's what we'll do first. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Darryl Sims. He's known as the Alien Hunter. And Darryl, when we went away for break, you were just getting into a story about Roswell, and I had to cut you off. So the floor is yours, sir.
The story is basically this. The relative of mine has no interest in the UFO phenomenon and is actually afraid of it. Came to me and said, one of the person heard a story. And I said, okay. And I said, you heard this firsthand? And the individual said, yes. And so, what's the story? And they said, I've sit here, listen to you discuss some of the Roswell stuff from a UFO point of view, but from an intelligence point of view. And I just wanted you to know that I think that you're probably right. And I said, well, how in the world could you verify anything? You don't even like the subject, and you don't know anything about it anyway. And they said, well, actually, I do. because the person I heard that told me the story was an eyewitness. I said, what? Now, this is a relative, so, I mean, I have no reason whatsoever to doubt the circumstance. And, again, they don't want to be bandied out there or thrown out there. But I am pursuing this, of course. And I said, what you're telling me is that this story, the Roswell crash, was verified by this individual. And he said, that is correct. He was present when the phone call was made to a particular general who was a relative of his. He was eating dinner at the time the phone call came through. And the relative came through, and the general, and was white as a sheet. He said, we're all just sitting there eating, and he looks and said, they found a flying saucer at Roswell. He said, that's the first verification that this individual ever had of anything. And on the deathbed of the general, the general told the rest of the story that he didn't tell the military to his relative, who, interestingly enough, relayed that story to my relative. And, man, it's just one of those things you just want to just bite through 10-penny nails because, I mean, this is like could break Roswell open real well and in very much in favor of the UFO phenomena. And if we could just get these two people to in the same room with the camera going and get them to tell their stories and
do you know,
how it all happened and so on.
Do you know what is the rest of the story that the general told?
That's the part that they don't want me discussing. And the thing they did allow me to, the relative allowed me to do was to record the conversation we had. So I do have it on tape. I just can't do anything with it. And that's why some of these stories just irritate me to no end. When you do find out some of this stuff, then they put the skids and the brakes on it, saying they don't want you talking about it or don't want you doing this or until I die or until something changes or
I think I'm going to send you about 40 emails saying that your relative did talk to you.
That way
you'll be in the same club with me.
Does that have anything to do with that hand grenade course again?
Yeah.
But anyway, I've just gone about half crazy over that story. I mean, it's so hot and it's so good. And that individual being an eyewitness account would be virtually unquestioned if they came forward. It'd be good they did that before they died. I just hate to see this kind of stuff just go by the wayside, you know, unless they have some. I mean, if they have a car accident, something like that, and they die in a car accident, it's all gone. I mean, it's secondhand at best, you know. Then I can go ahead and turn my tape over, and people can listen to it, so to speak. But that's just the part that interested me about the story is this. It supports a view that I have, which is an intelligence view about the Roswell incident. In other words, when I put my intelligence hat on, I don't look at Roswell the way probably a lot of ufologists look at it. I understand that something crashed there. There was a craft. There's probably some bodies. I'm not arguing any of that or defending it or anything. I'm simply saying if information is as it is relayed and it seems to be correct, we're asking ourselves the wrong questions. Not did a flying saucer crash there? Did an alien get caught? Did one live and did the others die? So I'll put my intelligence hat on and give that story very briefly. Briefly, in my opinion, the whole Roswell incident, if it happened as it is portrayed, and I think it did, was a trap. If you're an alien and you want to penetrate the United States government, you're not going to land on the White House lawn and start the show that way. It's not going to work. They'll watch you forever. They'll never trust you. However, if you crash a craft, or two of them even, that's better, bounce a couple of them off each other, land one of them in Corona, one somewhere else, it doesn't make any difference how many of your little guys die, because they're just toasters anyway. And I'm not saying that as some prejudicial, terrible thing about aliens. I'm telling you that they're unimportant compared to the big plan. And there's plenty of them. There is an endless number of these little characters. So it doesn't matter how many you lose. It only matters that at least one of them survives. And that's the one you get to, quote-unquote, capture. Now, let's suppose you capture this little bugger. You take him into the headquarters, and you've got him down at Wright Patton. I mean, you're doing the big one. You're befriending him, feeding him ice cream, or whatever it is you think that he's supposed to be eating. And all of a sudden, at some point when the communication does start, do you want some private in there handling this case, or do you think that you might want to bring in the best brass that you've got? Well, they did. That was the individual that my relative spoke to, the relative of the general. That general was the one that was apparently involved in the questioning and the details of this little creature. The problem with it is, and any abductee knows this, these creatures, if you are captured by them, or if they are near you, they can download everything in your head. All your information gets downloaded very quickly and can be uploaded somewhere else. Now, the question is, if we put the top military industrial complex general sitting in front of this character, what makes you think they didn't download him? And the story gets better. And any abductee will also say this. They can beam these guys in and out anytime they want to. They can get them in and out through a wall or whatever they do. Why did he never get beamed out? Why is he still, quote-unquote, probably still there, maybe alive to this day? I don't know. But the point is, I think for a long time, we didn't have a clue about what this thing was capable of. People didn't know. There weren't any abduction stories out then, and the people could just go listen to and so on. There was just no information like that. So it was rather stunning. And anyway, in my opinion, the little bugger downloaded everything from that general, transferred it, obviously, to the next character, probably passed through the wall there, probably the next day or the next series of times when they came in. And he was basically the Manchurian candidate for them. And, I mean, it just... Now, what's interesting, but that's just my thesis about what I think happened. That's just my view from the intelligence point of view. It has nothing to do with ufology.
Got 30 seconds till break. Go ahead.
Okay, 30 seconds. The bottom line is this. The story that my relative told me on tape matches that. The general apparently became friends with the little bugger and literally went from a quote-unquote general to a contactee. I find that whole story fascinating.
All right, I actually told you wrong about 30 seconds till break. We now have about 30 seconds till break. Let me ask you this very quickly. When they're downloading this information, well, we lost him. I'll have to ask him when we come back from break. I want to know, whenever we these little guys download our minds, I wonder if we're aware of it when it's happening. And if we're aware of it when it's happening, is there anything that we can do to block it, to stop it? Because if there's not anything we can do to stop it, then it would seem to me to be perilous to be in any close proximity to these guys. We'll ask him when we get him back on the phone. We'll be back right after this. Well, we have Daryl Sims back on the phone with us, and I appreciate all the outside help we're getting. Daryl, when you were cut off, I was just about to ask you, when these little guys are downloading information out of somebody's head, is that person aware of that?
Most of the time, no. I'll give you an example, and then this statement I made to a number of abductees, sometimes it irritates them when I tell them this. They ask me, you know, do you believe my abductions are real? And I say, yes, because I've reviewed your case and I think that it is. But in my opinion, probably 75% of the time, you're not going anywhere. They say, what do you mean by that? I mean, generally speaking, and that's not true with everybody, but generally speaking, about 75% of the time, you're still in the room. You're being visited, but they're not taking you anywhere. Whatever's happening with you mentally is happening in your head. And on the other occasions where you are being taken, the other 25% of the time, you come back with lumps, bumps, cuts, bruises, scars. You feel terrible. You wake up with a flu-like symptoms. You can't figure out why. You got the scars and bruisings, and you can't understand why those are there. You're maybe disoriented. And one of the most important thing, telltale signs of it, is you come back with fluorescence, where they touched you.
All right. Now, I have a follow-up question now about when they're downloading. Okay, so we can't tell it, but is there anything that we can do to stop it?
If it happens on a conscious level, in my opinion, yes. The this gets to the heart of alien hunting, as far as I'm concerned, because alien hunting to me isn't a title that that someone assigns to you because they think what you do is kind of cool. It has to do with actually hunting them and finding out what it is that they do and why they're here, what it is that they're doing. When the entities come in and they're not taking you, as an example, they will usually come right next to you in your bed or wherever you're at, lean that large black eye right next to your eye, and I mean within a very short period of time, it's like extracting all the data out of your, not everything out of you, just a copy of it, so to speak. They're just copying what's in there. And sometimes they don't make... they don't get an updated copy, so to speak. A good example of this was in my wife had read David Jacob's book, excellent book on Secret Life, I believe it is. I'd not read it. And she said, in there, she said this young man is he sees his mom, his dad, and his dog, and he keeps looking at him. Dad's reading the paper, mom's washing dishes, dog's laying there, and he's realizing there's something wrong with this picture. He keeps shaking his head and basically just pops out of this state that they've got him in, and there's three aliens standing in those places. And I said, well, what alerted him to that, sweetie? I said, is that his dog had been dead, according to your story you told me. His dog had been dead for apparently some time, 2 or 3 months. Well, they hadn't been back since then, so they didn't know. So they make mistakes. Again, is another way that you can capitalize on what they do. And also realize they're not godlike. They make all kinds of mistakes. And you, and as an alien hunter, that's the idea, is to capitalize on this stuff. One of the things I'll go ahead and divulge this. It's kind of fun.
Okay.
This lady came to me one time crying. She says, oh, they're doing this to me and my kid. No, it's horrible. And then a little girl was telling the same story. And the parents wouldn't discuss it with her because they didn't want her to. They think if you don't tell the kids, they won't know. Well, if we're already abducting the kids already do know.
Mm-hmm.
And a fascinating case, but long story short, the mother says, what can I do to stop them? I said, well, I said, when they're doing what they're doing, if you want to mess the abduction up, she says, what do you mean? I said, remember, these characters have an IQ of about 80. If you understand that and you get it, you can have a lot of fun. She says, what do you mean? I said, okay, and so I ran her through a little practice, and then I did a post-hypnotic suggestion so that it would go off in her next abduction if it happened. And it did, and she said, she came back, she was laughing so hard, she said, it works, it works. I said, what? What are you talking about? She said, what you told me to do. And I said, what did I tell you to do? She said, he got in there and they were doing their job on me as they had me in the on the slab, so to speak, in a real abduction on the table. And said he got next to me and everything, and they were trying to do their control thing and so on. And I didn't want to do that. I wasn't going to do it. And she said, of course, all they do is they just refocus you into, well, when they finally get you, that's it. You're cooked, you know, you just do whatever they say. She said, I did what you said, and she said, it was so neat. She said, this post-hypnotic suggestion, she said, it just popped in, and I knew exactly what to do. I didn't have to remember anything. I said, what did you do, sweetie? She said, I looked at him. I opened my eyes instead of squinting my eyes closed, you know, scared of him and everything. I opened my eyes and looked at him, and he was almost surprised. However you can discern the surprise on their face. And she said, instantly I looked at him, and he started giving these suggestions of you won't remember whatever these things are that they tell him. And she says, M-I-C. And he kept throwing his suggestions at her, and she says, K-E-Y. And he's like, what is what is the problem? And she said, M-O-U-S-E. And then she starts singing the whole Mickey Mouse song, insanely funny, and she just won't stop. Well, she said, they finally just got me off the slab, put my clothes back on, and took me back. They never could get anything done. Whatever it was they were going to do mentally with her, it didn't work. I said, well, how do you feel about that? And she laughed and says, I did not know that you could mess with them. I said, these little buggers, the little guys, if you mess with them outside the purview of their understanding, they don't get it and they don't know what to do about it. Now, they might bring in a bigger guy, and that has happened. But the point is, if you want to rebel enough, and I said I did for 13 years, in the last event, they finally just canned me and kicked me out of the program.
You have been expelled from alien school. All right, I want to open up the telephone lines and let people who have a question or a comment give you a call. And let me say, folks, if you are outside of the United States or Canada, the telephone number we use will work. It's 602-539-9580. It will work from anywhere in the world, but you do have to pay that international long distance when you do that. And if you want to avoid that, you're outside of the United States and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, all right? Now, the flash message is pretty simple. You just scroll down on my webpage until you see the link that says flash message, all right? That's all you have to do. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Kevin, we can barely hear you, but go ahead. I'm going to turn your volume up.
All right. According to the late Colonel J. Philip Corso in his book The Day After Roswell, you were talking about early how the grays see in the infrared spectrum. However, when they were investigating the crash at Roswell, some of the soldiers said that when they went inside the craft, when they were looking outside the windows, this was at nighttime here, and they were saying that when they looked out the windows, it was as if it was daylight. It looked like daylight. And that they could look out the window and it would look like it was just daylight, like the...
Like night vision.
Yeah, like night vision, but it was better than night vision. It was as if it absorbed all the light around them, and it absorbed all the light and made it as if they were looking into daylight. So if they were able to look, if that's how they looked at things, and that's how humans were able to see it, wouldn't that be how the grays did, or did the ship somehow read the person's mind and project the image as the person's mind would perceive it?
Well, what do you think about that?
I didn't hear all of the last part of the question.
Well, basically, you were talking about the way that aliens see us in infrared and so forth. And he's making reference to Philip Corso talking about when they went inside the craft and they looked out through the windows. It was just like, it was nighttime, but it was just like looking out at daytime. And so if that's how it is, then aren't their eyes more like us?
That's possible. Again, let's go back to the possibility that first of all, that Corso and them who are relating this, assuming it's true, and let's assume that it is for the sake of discussion, you're looking through a lens probably very similar to theirs. In other words, you're looking through a big lens of whatever it is they've already got over their eye.
Okay, so when they're in the spacecraft, they're not using their lens that's over their eye?
Well, they're using theirs, but I'm saying if when, let's say, Corso or anybody walks inside that craft and looks out the windows, it's like you looking through the little alien's eye lens. You're looking through his window, which is the same, let's say, the same material, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
or the same technology.
Okay. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Outstanding, sir.
Well, I always love it when Daryl comes on. I always get the chance to call in and ask any kind of question I want to ask him. It's just great. It's what makes your show the greatest and of its kind. Now, the question I had today, this time, was there's a few stories out there, some of them on the Internet, who knows if they're true or not, Daryl, that at some point, and this is not meant to be about politics, avoiding politics, that at some point in your career, somebody, and I don't know if this is true or not, and I'll hang up after I ask this, and you can. I want to wish you both a happy new year, too, but after I ask this, I'll hang up and you can answer. But at some point, possibly somebody, is it true that somebody from the office of Hillary Clinton or one of her associates or science advisors tried to contact you at some point? Can you set the record straight on that? Is that true or not? And I'll just take it off the air. Thank
All
you.
Right, thanks for the call. What about that, Daryl?
The answer to the question is that is correct. This is not a story about hype or something like that. I'm just simply relaying that there were a couple of people and I who were meeting this lady, and she identified herself, and so did the other individual with her, and they relayed to me as best they possibly could to convince me that this was in fact a very best friend of Hillary Clinton. And I said, well, okay, what do I owe the honor of this meeting? And they were interested in, number one, that Hillary, according to this woman, and again, I never met Hillary, so I don't know anything about Hillary, and I don't claim to. That's not the story. The story is the individual claimed this, and the other individual involved swore that it was true as well. And the lady seemed articulate and quite knowledgeable about the Clintons in the most kind way. And she said, what would you like to see happen in the stuff that you're doing? And I said, well, I said, obviously, one of the things we'd love to see happen is at some point somebody to be able to fund us and for us to be able to do this I said, I've got tons of evidence that I have done nothing with. I could spend $100,000 tomorrow on evidence that's just sitting. And she said, well, there's a possibility that you might be able to get a grant. And I said, well, you know, I'm certainly willing to listen to that. I said, as long as everything's above board. And I said, and I don't mean to imply something wouldn't be. I'm just saying that's the way I am. I said, some of the people I know in the UFO community could care less. I do. I said, things have to work right. And the long and the short of that is this. She took some videos. Gave her two videos to take with her to give to Hillary to let her and Bill know what it is we do and the seriousness of what it is we do. And reportedly, the lady took them. I met the lady again sometime later, and she explained to me, she said, and this is a matter of record, she told me that they both enjoyed the videos were surprised, of course, to see the nature of what it is that I do, from the surgical removal of these alleged implants to fluorescence and other evidence that we have. I mean, a couple of her videos is pretty fascinating. And then she looked at me and said, I guess they liked them pretty good, because the lady said, well, there's a good chance that we can get you quite a bit of money on a kind of like on the tail end of a grant. And I said, what do you mean? And I said, just act like I'm dense and I don't get it. Explain it to me slowly. And she said, basically, the way this works is there's nobody going to fund UFO research, quote unquote, from the government. It ain't going to happen. Just forget it. I said, I understand that. She said, the way that you can do that, though, there are some people that are sympathetic to what it is that you're doing. And, or if they're not, they could certainly be encouraged to include you in a study, which you would be awarded a certain amount of money to do whatever it is that you do. And that would be it. And I said, understood. And she described the process, and I told her, I said, I really didn't want to do that. And she says, I don't understand. Why not? And I said, well, I know probably to you in the political field, it's money is like water, and you can just get as much as you want. I said, but the problem is, to me, I said, I have a background in law enforcement. And I used to be a senior military police officer, and I worked in the company for 2 years. And she said, yes, I know. She said, we know about your background. I said, okay. I said, the way you're talking about getting this money, I said, bothers me, and I don't think that you could stand the scrutiny of an investigation. She says, well, it's not going to be investigated. I said, as far as you know. I said, I am the kind of person that I don't want questions coming up later, and so I have to decline the offer, assuming it's even valid. And she just looked at me stunned. She said, I'm really shocked. And I said, young lady, I said, I have had offers even in the city of Houston to do work in the construction industry 25 years ago when I was in the construction business as a building contractor. And I said, all the people that were involved in that went to jail. And I said, I'm not saying you're doing that or they or any of the people would be in this thing. I said, but it smells like the same thing, and I can't do that. And I said, I don't care if it's drug money. I don't care if it's government money, but it can't be accounted for properly. I said, I'm not going to end up on the end of an investigation 10 years later trying to explain how I got money, millions of dollars, from
unaccounted for. All right, let's go back to the phone.
I said, I'm not going to spend 10 years of my life in a prison trying to figure out why did I do that. It's not going to happen. So I said, thank them for me, And I don't know how valid that offer was or it wasn't. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know that.
Darrell, let's go back to the telephone. We've got people holding. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How we doing?
Good.
I'd like to ask Darrell if he's read or knows about that new book from Whit. With the streamer, the Nye incident.
Do you know about the Nye incident book?
I do not.
Okay, because the way he was, was talking, sounds like he doesn't really hold them too much in high regard as far as being something that the human race would want to mess with. I also think that it's they're not regular beings, that they're like we would be other beings on another planet. Who knows where they come from? But
well, Terry, let me ask you a question, Terry. Do you think that extraterrestrials are? Is it your opinion that they are hostile towards us, or that they're dangerous to us?
I don't believe, just to come out and say, we're going to be attacked like, like the movie or whatever, but we're used to their ends, and, if you're one of the unlucky ones, then they're, They're very dangerous to you.
Terry, are you a religious person?
Pardon me?
Are you a religious person?
I believe in Christ. I wouldn't say I believe in religion.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think about angels? Are they good or bad?
Well, from what everything I'm trying to piece together here, you know, and find out, you know, what reality is, mm-hmm. you know, in my own mind. I mean, you know, you got to.
So, what's your opinion of angels?
I believe that they are real. Just as much as I believe, I ain't never seen a UFO or an alien. But just as much as I believe that they're real and these people are having real encounters.
Okay, now here's why I asked that. And just sort of for clarification. You know, we talk about extraterrestrials and, you know, we talk about the really, I would say, horrific things that they do to some of the people that they abduct. It doesn't happen to all abductees, but it does happen to a very vast number of them. And we talk about that, and we sort of get the idea that, okay, extraterrestrials are no good. They're harmful to us. But angels are extraterrestrials. They're not from here. If you're not from here, you're extraterrestrial.
Correct.
So it would seem to me that there may be, you know, a certain class or a certain group or category that are benevolent to us, and there may be others that are not benevolent to us, and obviously we know that because, you know, they abduct people and do all kinds of really pretty horrific things. And even you've heard of cattle mutilation. Well, there are stories, accounts of that sort of thing being done to humans by these extraterrestrials. So I don't know. I think there, you know, there are certain categories of these guys that maybe are referred to in the Bible as angels. You know, certainly if those exist, they're extraterrestrial.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, the only game plan, you know, I can follow along is what happened, you know, in UFO in history, and then what's happening today seems to be pretty much the same thing. I mean, why are they so interested, you know, in our genome pool? And, you know, it just seems, you know, it doesn't take an Einstein to see, you know, a pattern going on here. You know, and these aren't good guys. You know, they're using us to a certain end, even though, you know, that they're not taking over the world. And,
all right, Terry, we're into a break. I got to run. Interesting call as always, and I thank you for it. Folks, we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone line is open, 602-539-9580. If you have a question for the alien hunter, for Daryl Sims, give us a call, and he'll be glad to answer your question. If you have a comment, 602-539-9580, and if you're outside of the United States and you're outside of Canada, feel free to use our flash message feature and just click where it says flash message and it will get to us. You have to be outside of the United States or outside of Canada before I'll read those, okay? But we have a telephone line for you if you're inside of the United States or Canada. 602-539-9580, and you can talk with Daryl Sims. Daryl, let's talk about fluorescence a little bit. You've mentioned that when you've been with us before. What is it? What are we talking about there?
Well, basically, fluorescence is the best way to, for the audience in general to visualize this, is to imagine that if the entity touches you, he leaves a sweat material on you that's invisible to your sight. However, if you come back after your abduction and do the things that I've instructed my abductees to do, that is, if you think you've had a strange dream or any of these things that alert you to something's wrong, flu-like symptoms, et cetera, missing time, any of those things, then I want you to pull out your black light and start checking yourself. What you will find, if they physically touched you very recently, you'll find that there will be a fluorescence on you, either in a pattern such as long fingerprints across your arm, as an example where they held you down, or you may find a procedural drawing or mark on you in some particular way. You're behind your ear, on your neck, on your chest. There are different colorations of fluorescence. They mean different things. They have different. The best way for the audience really to get the whole picture, if they're that interested in it, is to go to my website and simply click on my name there and ask me, and I'll be glad to tell you anything you want to know about it. And of course, the book is right there on the website at alienhunter.org, and that's what the book's about. It's about evidence that we find in the invisible range, and of course, ultraviolet is in the invisible range, and you're not going to see this stuff unless you use a black light. One prominent investigator told me one time, he said, "Why did we never find this stuff on anybody before?" And I said, "Did you use black light?" And he said, "No."
Well, that might be a good reason then. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Robert calling from New York.
Hi, Robert.
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing, Kevin? How you doing, Daryl?
Hello, sir.
Good to hear you guys. I was going to ask Daryl, whom I know, about the angels and the Nordic. He sent me an email recently about it, and I wanted to hear a little more detail on their role in this whole thing. And that's basically it. Just wanted to take the opportunity to say hi to you guys, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Well, Happy New Year to you, too. Let me say for the audience who you are, this is Robert Morningstar. He is the editor of UFO Digest. And so what about that, Daryl? What about the relation of angels and Nordics?
Well, in my view, first of all, I have different hats I wear, and I have to preface, before I even answer the question, I have to announce this. I have a cop hat that I wear. It means basically I don't believe anything when you tell me your story. I'm just sitting there looking at you, looking for mistakes. I've got an intelligence hat that puts together a totally different mentality when that's on. And I have a spiritual hat just as well because I am a Christian. I don't, quote-unquote, use one to influence the other, so to speak. I can be dispassionate about any of those when I'm looking at any part of the phenomena. The fascinating thing to me that we found in our abductions, in rare cases, an angelic being would show up. And what happened was just astounding and was most revealing from my point of view. The alien, including the Nordics, couldn't get out of there quick enough. I mean, they had to exit stage right quickly. And this was fascinating to me that, number one, that, of course, there are people that believe that these entities are almost godlike and can do anything they want, walk through walls and do everything, which, in my opinion, is just another way of another aspect of physics. And if you knew that, then you'd be as smart as they were in that sense of the word. The Nordics, in my opinion, are not related in any way, shape, or form, quote-unquote, and they're not angelic. There are some people who believe that. The reason I don't ascribe to that is, number one, is because the angelics, when they do show up, everybody takes off. It's on the other side of the fence, so to speak. I mean everybody. and I mean some pretty rough guys, including some of them not even mentioned in the UFO literature. In my view, there are different levels in the alien phenomena, and all you're looking at here, all these different kinds of aliens that we call races and so on, I don't think are races at all. I think they're models. If I go to the car lot and look at all these models of cars, I don't think there are different races of cars out there. I think they're different models. And that's just the way I think about it for a lot of reasons. And I don't put that together lightly. So to me, the most amazing thing, and we found this out, though, again, quite accidentally, when the angelics show up, and I know this on a very personal level, that even happened to a relative of mine in my own home. And at three consecutive abductions, it would take a whole show just to tell the story. I did put a lot of it on film, the interviews and everything, and the physical evidence involved, and there was physical evidence. The entities couldn't get out fast enough. It was just absolutely amazing. And there is a hierarchy of these entities, the alien and the alien phenomenon. All you're looking at here, the ones we see, the reptile and the gray and the different ones, the mantis and all these other beings, the Nordics, these are just guys that are working for someone else. And that's a mid-level management group, in my opinion. But there's a vast difference between the two, between the alien and the angel.
What do you think about that, Robert?
I'm inclined to agree, because the angels are actually luminosities, intelligent luminosities from all in, from, you know, if you want a descriptive term. Whereas I feel that the Nordics are kind of a hybrid type of being, though they have a greater affinity toward the humans than, you know, they're more benevolent toward humans, I believe, than are the Greys in general.
Well, what's your position, Robert, on, you know, this question of are the extraterrestrials benevolent or hostile? Now, you know, I've already stated my position. My position is, well, some are one thing and some are the other. But what's your position on that?
You know, with all this stuff about spheres of influence around the Earth or over the Earth, I believe that they are kind of overlords over different kingdoms of life on the Earth, planet Earth. I believe that the mantids, for example, being more insectoid, have a great interest in maintaining the balance with the insect world. And perhaps the others, like the reptilians, all have a sphere of influence. It seems the Greys run rampant around doing genetic experiments and kind of trying to encapsulate a piece of themselves in their victims. So they all have different agendas. Some of the sources I have in deep contact with what's going on politically, exopolitically in the background, is that they have their spheres of influence, but they're also observing events unfolding on Earth in, as scientists would, as some big event is unfolding. And I think we're all caught up in this wave, and this realization is coming upon us all. And the big cover-up is the non-disclosure secrecy pact made by the U.S. government with extra-governmental organizations. Like, they call them non-governmental organizations, so somebody else is running the show outside government, and it's really gotten too much power. But the extraterrestrials have their vested interest in the planet. Many, many different regions, for example, the sea, some are very concerned with sea life. So that's basically my take on it. I would like to hear what Daryl has to say about that.
Well, all right, we'll get Daryl to comment on that. Robert, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and release the line. I have other calls lined up. Thanks for the call, man.
Take care.
I appreciate it. So what about that, Daryl?
Well, I love smart people. I love smart people. My take on it's a little different than that. My view is that what we see down here, the Nordic, the Mantis, and all these others, regardless of what their varying agendas may be and what their jobs may be, they're working for someone else.
Who are they working for?
They're working for, and I just use the term, in fact, I'm writing a book on it because it's so voluminous and it just has to tie this whole thing up. They're working for a group, in my opinion, that I simply refer to as mid-level management. And the best way to describe that is that, in my opinion, there are three tiers to the alien phenomena. The first one is, in fact, the alien-related phenomena that we see. There is another level that has to do with something that is, you rarely ever see those type entities in the second tier. Those who have are unfortunate enough to have met some of these entities. I'm one of them, and I've met eight other people who've had a similar experience to myself, and they proved that to me independently. Every one of them were forever changed. One of them was a relative of mine that ended up with grand mal epilepsy after her contact with that particular entity. Everyone that I know that's had contact with some of these types, it's just horrific. The various aliens on the first level will treat you in different ways depending on what they're instructed to do. A Nordic will treat you, by and large, very well, unless he's told to do otherwise. And I am an example of that, and I can tell you that on a first-hand basis. They do whatever they're instructed. If they're instructed to cause you to make you love them and so on, they will do that, and you will think you are in the school of higher consciousness and you're part of the big program. If they are also instructed to mutilate you, they will do so with equal enthusiasm. It won't make any difference. They are not their own. They are controlled by someone else, and I mean controlled.
All right, let's talk about the top level. Who is it?
That's a good question. In my book and then in my research that I'm working on, there is that's the big secret, I guess, of who controls what. And I'm working my way through this thing, breaking it out as best I can. And I spent some time with a scholar the other day, and he said, I don't get it. He said, I can't make spiritual stuff. And this UFO stuff, he said, and I know both are correct, he said, but I can't make them work. And I laughed, and I said, you raise your right hand and swear not to tell anybody, I'll tell you. And I said, because I don't want it out, I don't want it in a book or on the internet until I actually, I said, I've had so much stuff stolen from me and put out as if it were someone else's. I said, it just angers me, so I just don't do that anymore.
Daryl, we're into a break. We'll have to hear the rest of that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back. We'll be on Final Approach, but I'll still take your calls. The caller that was on hold, you hung up too soon, just a few seconds too soon. So give us a call. We'll be back right after this. All right, we're back. We're on Final Approach, meaning, of course, we only have just a few minutes left. And, Daryl, if you will, go ahead and finish that story. We have a caller on hold waiting, so it's the floor is yours, Daryl.
Well, basically, that there are three tiers, and that I'm not going to discuss the contents of the second tier or the third until I get my research done. But basically, my view is simply that that we're in a lot of trouble.
Okay.
And we better figure this thing out.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, where are you calling from? Hello, caller. Okay. Well, caller has gone away again. We have time for one more call, 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. We'll take one more call. Daryl, you say we're in a world of trouble. Are we going to live through it?
Oh, I think we will, and I think at the end of the story, we win. In one sense of the word, I mean, what other choice do you have? You're going to war, is an example. And, what other opinion do you think you better have if you're on the fighting side? You got to win.
You have to think positively about it. But, I mean, other than positive thinking, is there any indication that we're actually going to?
In my opinion, there is. And I'd like to address one of the Robert Morningstar's issues in reference to the abductee, because to me, the abductee is a kind of a centerpiece of a lot of the stuff. We sometimes lose them in the big discussion, and I'm very pro-abductee here. A lady told me one time, says, well, they're just doing to you what we do to animals. And I said, no, ma'am, that's not true. She says, yes, it is. Said, we tag animals, and that's what they're doing. I said, so if I go out and tag an animal, like a lion or a bear, and the lion wakes up too early and he injures one of my people on my team, should we kill the lion? She said, of course not. It's just an animal. I said, okay, I'm with you. I just want to make sure I understand your headspace. And I said, so if I get abducted and I wake up too early, and it's now cosmic wild kingdom out there, and I'm the animal, so to speak, that's the way you termed it, can I do anything I want to them? No, you can't. That's immoral. I said, why is it that you give these guys a pass? You call me an animal, and not that I have any interest in hurting them, but if I wanted to, you say I can't do it, but yet you say I'm an animal just like the lion or the bear, and that if I wake up too early and everything, I can't do anything. However, if I catch an alien and do the same thing that they're doing to us, I'm immoral. I said, does it ever occur to you that there's something wrong with your thinking? Serious. Wrong.
Well, do you think that this group of aliens, the non-angelics, do you think they have intentions of taking over the planet?
I don't think that's their purpose or plan. If that were true, they would have already attempted that long ago. I don't think that's the case. I think, first of all, any plans like that would be coming from far higher. What these guys are doing down here with their various experiments and the various things that they're doing and so on is so different than that kind of approach. It's not even... It doesn't even make sense. But where a lot of people, in my opinion, get messed up on this business is they take what we see down here as what's going on at all levels, and it isn't. And again, this takes a different look at ufology than you got to have something besides a UFO hat on to look at this thing. You need all the hats you can get, all of them. A case in point, if we have a moment... one lady was sexually assaulted by one of the entities, and I worked a case with a lady, and it broke up the family. I mean, literally, the family split over this last major abduction. I mean, they don't even talk anymore. None of them. Kids, they all left. And the lady finally came to me and said, I'd like for you to work with me, and I said, okay. And long story short, she had been sexually molested, and she thought it was her doctor. That was the screensaver memory they left with her. Your doctor did it to you. Well, I got news for you. Asked her how many corners were in that room. And she said, she looks around and she's stunned. She said, well, there aren't any. I said, yes, there are. I said, how many corners are in your doctor's office? And she said, well, six, you know, based on these two rooms. And I said, okay, very good. I said, so where are the corners? Look at them. She said, well, there aren't any. And she kept arguing with me. Well, this is a good indicator. She's in memory, and you can't make her hallucinate. And he started to sexually assault her, and she said, she cried and cried and cried, very moral lady, and she said, why did he do that to me? And I said, sweetie, I said, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that because you've already had enough damage in your family, and we're probably never going to have a conversation again for the rest of your life. I'm going to give you a big hint. She said, okay. I said, think of him as a tape recorder. I said, first of all, he doesn't even have sexual genitalia to do anything with. I said, what he did to you in sexually assaulting you and molesting you, I said, think of him as a tape recorder and those passions he carries now to someone else. I said, it's for someone else's enjoyment, not his.
Wow. That's a mind bender.
Yes, sir. There's a lot of stuff out there like that doesn't make any sense when it comes to, quote, unquote, the alien agenda. The alien part down here don't mean a whole lot to the mid-level management. They're just doing whatever they're instructed to do.
Do you have any idea, and we've only got about 3 minutes left here, but do you have any idea as to whether we're ever going to see, or let me say, do you have an opinion as to whether we're ever going to see a disclosure, some level of disclosure, officially here in this country?
I think we will have a disclosure, and I think it's going to be because something's going to happen so big and so massive that it can't be covered up, and it's going to be too bad. I think the disclosure project, as it is currently ongoing, will never work. It'll never work for several reasons. And don't get me wrong, I'm all happy for it. I mean, I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong here. Don't anybody say, he doesn't believe in disclosure. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in that. But I'm just saying that the cards are stacked against you. There are several people on the disclosure. Most of the people, and I'm going to say this, probably 99% of the people on the disclosure that have volunteered to give their testimony and so on, 99% of those people are honest and truthful, and I think their stories are real. There are several people that are lying. And all it takes on a congressional committee is for several of you to have the great hand placed upon you, and the UFO community says these are people who are all perfect and they're really going to tell the truth, only to find out that somebody's going to rip you to shreds in a congressional hearing when they find out that you're lying all this time. Some of these people, the bad ones and the bad apples in this wonderful barrel of good apples, can destroy this whole thing. And obviously, I don't think the intelligence community has to infest the discovery people with any more than they already have, because you've got enough of the several liars there doing what they're going to be doing. And when that all comes out, I don't think it'll ever get to a hearing, but if it does, we're all going to be very embarrassed when it comes out. And you're going to be real surprised to find out who they are. And I assure you, they will be aired out and vetted in the most perfect form.
All right. Do you think there's ever going to be these congressional hearings?
The disclosure will come from people like you, me, other people in the UFO community. They're going to find something that's so huge, so big, it's going to get...
I'm not telling it.
I understand. You'll get so many emails, you won't be able to listen.
Daryl, thanks for being with us, man. I appreciate it. Stay on the line with me. We're out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Sims. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.